Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Ben. Join me as I chat with big thinkers, decision makers, and leaders in the world of tech. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, give us a follow on your favorite streaming platform. Welcome to the show, guys. We're joined by Adil Ejaz from Pretty Little Thing. He's the head of tech. Welcome to the show, Adil. It's really good to speak to you.
Thank you for having me. It's very nice to be here.
Yeah, brilliant. I think to get started, I mean, I think everybody on the planet knows what Pretty Little Thing is. But for the people that don't know what Pretty Little Thing is and perhaps maybe live on the planet Mars or under a rock, could you give a kind of a brief insight into what you do, what Pretty Little Thing is?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Like you say that when I joined the company and I had to tell my friends I'm joining a company called Pretty Little Thing, and they were like, "Pretty Little, what?" but now they're sending me snaps from Dubai or in LA where we see the banners and stuff. So yeah, so for people who don't know, and I'm pretty sure a lot of people don't know, Pretty Little Thing is we're a fashion brand. We believe style should be accessible to everybody, whatever the budget. We have had amazing growth over the past few years and worked with some amazing celebrities like, you know, Maya Jama, Ashley Graham, Little Mix, Rocky and J-Lo. But now we're more than a brand. We're doing a lot of things with customers to train your confidence in terms of how they dress and present themselves to the world. We're building a community as well to, body positivity is a big message from us, equality, regardless of the body type, race or gender. And we're constantly trying to push those forward.
Amazing. So as head of technology, could you give us a bit of insight into what kind of that entails and what you do?
A big part, I wear a lot of hats because Pretty Little Thing is a very flat structured company. So I know very quite a hat, but a big part of my role, what I do here is at any time making sure, we are innovating and building products for the future. You constantly are looking at your tech stack, you're looking at what's ahead on the horizon and try to see and make sure we're trying to ride the wave as easy as possible. And it's a very tricky place to be because you have to constantly ask yourself this question, is this the right way of doing this? Even though you know this is the right way and you've done this in the past, doesn't mean it'll work for you in the future. So it's the constant, it's the new norm kind of thing for me where you start thinking and asking those questions as early as possible to make sure you've got a nice trajectory to put those things on the roadmap.
You must be constantly trying to stay ahead of the curve with technology. I mean, what kind of resources do you use to keep ahead of the game? Is there any that you rely on?
All sorts. So one of the big kind of factors is trying to be with people who are cleverer than you. It's a big part of the culture at Pretty Little Thing that we're constantly trying to get people who push you. I always say that if you are in a room with people where you're not the cleverest, then it's not the great place to be because then you get comfortable. And if you're comfortable, you don't push yourself. Yeah. So it's a good place to kind of like first of all get a talent in, which really helps drive that innovation, and those ideas kind of start popping up from people. And then there's a lot of support structure we have at PLT that kind of like helps that drill down more. So for example, we have amazing support from other vendors, including AWS. Google's helping us quite a lot with the other things. There is a lot of support coming in from other supports. Akamai is a big one that I can mention we're working with. So there's a lot of other companies that kind of come in and help. And then we also look at just general tech news kind of thing. We try to keep up to date of as many things as possible to see what's coming on and, try to kind of see the trend as things happen and start mapping out, thinking, that's something useful and, keep a bookmark on it and, pick it up from the shelf when we need it.
I'm interested now in your kind of career history and your journey because head of technology at Pretty Little Thing is a big job. So how did you get to where you are today?
It's a very interesting story and it all kind of works out at the end is what I can say. And I started my my job when I was in the university and it was a very simple job ad saying, we're looking for a PHP developer who knows a bit of MySQL. And I ended up in that role, learned all the ins and outs of e-commerce by myself with a small, very small team, and we work out on the UX, UI, server management, SEO, you know, all these things. Now you have teams and teams of people working on it, but it was like literally a small 3 or 4 people team kind of doing everything.
Yeah.
So we learned a lot of it on a very small scale. It's a very amazing business, and it kind of like set me up for like the future. And that opened up opportunity into my second role in Tencentrix, which was an American company. I got to work in a full, I will call it red tape, but it was almost like a full structure with a proper organization, how it feels like. And kind of set me up in terms of how to do big level projects in a big level company, how to do architecture design reviews, how to kind of sit down and get, you know, in a small company, you don't have to convince anybody. It's just yourself. But a big company where there's 30, 40, 50, 70 devs, you have to tell them to fight that fight with you. So I learned a lot of stuff on how to convince people, how to also learn from people, figure out together. I remember the quote from one of the CEOs used to say, like, you know, force multiply. It's how do you get all these people to push in the same direction and being able to deliver what needs to be done in a big scale. So all that stuff was picked in there. And then I got, it was a very interesting opportunity. I wasn't interested to join Air First. It was our IT director who actually kind of convinced me, saying, you know, you need to look at this seriously because it's a very great opportunity. And then I came in and I saw what was on offer, and it was a business that was growing absolutely at a crazy pace, and it just didn't know how to deal with the growth. So it was an amazing opportunity. I came in and I helped architect a lot of the stuff in the beginning. A lot of things, services that we have now, we're using the core services were kind of like architected by me. And then we kind of like slowly, as you move on from it, I kind of let those things go and took on the head of technology role because that seemed more suited.
Cool. I mean, so you're mentioning that they were like struggling to deal with the growth that they had. I mean, so what did you do to prepare for that scale?
A few things. So I believe in designing things for the now and don't try to think too much for the future. I'll explain that. What happens is most of the times you'll start thinking about all these hypothetical cases that may happen and not look at the problem that actually is happening right now. So it's a good short-term way of thinking of the problems and solving things for quickly. So the first kind of like round of kind of approach taken at Brittle Thing was just that. Let's try to get fixed things today. And we slowly started putting in pieces, re-architecturing, rebuilding services, getting rid of some of the legacy stuff that was knocking about, and just trying to improve things. And I remember in the first 3 or 4 weeks, we were able to make the website faster by 3 seconds or something, just by generally looking at stuff and going like, okay, what can we improve here, guys? And then came in, you know, once we got through the first cyber, when I was here, and we sat back and thought, okay, let's start mapping out the next 3 years of the PLT. And we started picking up the bigger projects that nobody would dare touch. And just generally thinking about how would we do this at scale, not just the scale of the business, but the scale of the team. We were a very small team in 2017 when I joined. I think we were just little over 20 or 30 people in the team. Now we're 70 or 80 people in the IT team. So it's a much bigger growth we have seen. So you have to come up with a structure that should kind of go across the size. So we started thinking about how would we model over architecture, how would we model over teams. There was a lot of like both technical and non-technical learning to be done by the business to understand how to harness this amazing problem we had of growth and scale.
So, I mean, obviously, we're going to have to talk about the situation with COVID right now.
Yes.
It's pretty difficult to avoid. But I found that people working in technology have adapted really well. I'm just really intrigued to see how Pretty Little Thing and the tech team there has adapted, because that's a lot of people to manage.
It is, and I think IT always has it easy because we, you know, I joke around saying as long as we have a laptop, we can do the work. So, I mean, I have put, you know, as myself, when I was used to be a developer, I used to excuse this, like try to go to a beach and work from there because it's just a laptop. But it kind of is true. So when we were told to work from home, And yes, you know, as a whole business, to work from home was a big thing, because for some people, especially non-IT departments, they needed to be in the physically into the building to their job. Think about studios who have to take photos of models and, you know, photo shoots and things like that. So those people had to be in the premise to do that. Similarly, there's a lot of quality control, sample checking setup that we have to be. They get delivered at the office. So you have to be here to do that. So when we did the test to work from home, we did a test run to see how would the company, and this was before even the government made a decision on working from home. We just did it one of ourselves to see how it feels like. And it went really well. Other than a few niggles as with the IT stuff as normally is, you know, making sure everybody was in the VPN, that sort of stuff. It went pretty smoothly. So, and we were very quickly, as an IT team especially, able to function a lot better, because, you know, people were saving time on commutes. People were saving, you know, time waking up early in the morning to make sure they can get past rush traffic, you know, all the kind of rush hour. And, you know, it just simplified a lot of those things for people. So as we got more into the lockdown, the easier it became. And, you know, people started adjusting, you know, a lot of people started going for walks and runs in the afternoons or for lunchtime, because they had that time, which they didn't have before.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, is there anything that you found during this time that you're going to take forward into the future? You know, is it going to be a remote first kind of environment now, or is it going to be still back in the office? And is there anything you've taken forward?
Yeah, it is. It is an interesting times, because you know people are learning that, you know, there was this stigma with remote working. A lot of people were like, "It's not for us." But now being forced to work remotely has opened that up a little bit. And you can start thinking about, we already were doing it in a way, because we had offices in Ukraine and in Pakistan. So we already have some kind of remote working going on for some people. So, but do at this scale, it opens up doors for us and opportunities, yes.
Yeah. So I've heard a lot about people who, especially in tech, who have started to kind of do a Silicon Valley kind of thing, where they hire people, but not from the specific location of where, like, the office is. So, like, they hire people from, say, like, Birmingham and, like, I don't know, London, but the HQ is in Manchester. Is that something that you're going to take on, or have you started doing that already at all?
No, so we are looking into it. There's a lot more to it than just that. There's a lot of security elements that we have to figure out. A lot of our processes will have to be improved to allow for that. So we do have some form of setup in place that lets people work remotely from other offices. For tech team, it's an interesting problem to have, and we are discussing internally to see what our options are going forward.
So I'm just thinking about the tech now, and obviously the business that you're in, everything is evolving very, very, very quick, to say the very least. So I'm intrigued to see, like, how has tech evolved compared to when you first started in the business?
Massively is the simple answer.
Scarily.
You know, it is, because when I joined, my IT director said to me, like, think of the peak traffic we do, which is between, you know, 7 o'clock at night till 10 o'clock at night, with people sat at their, you know, in the home and browsing. Whatever that number is would become your off-peak number the next year. And,
right.
And that's insane, because that's doesn't make any sense, because you'll be running your systems at peak performance, and those will become the off-peak performance numbers the following year. And I never believed it. I was like, you know, I thought, there's no way. It's not possible. This can't happen. And then it did. I saw them myself, and I was like, okay, back to drawing board. So, you know, and it's an interesting problem to have. And I say this to my team as well. Whatever we're building right now will eventually be redundant. Whether that's 6 months from now, 12 months from now, 8 months from now, it has a shelf life. So sometimes that helps you put stuff in perspective, because sometimes when you start thinking about or discussing a point or an argument, like, that should be done that way, and we can't see past that choice, I say to them, is like, this is only temporary, guys. We'll come back and do this anyway. So it makes things a lot more easier. There are some systems that once we've built will be there forever, and you know, not everything changes. And for those systems, we do have a proper process in place where we look and review them every so often. And a lot of our technology has moved on from conventional monolith kind of setups, which people are used to building and have built. Nobody starts to build a monolith. It just ends up being one. But we have taken the microservices architecture and really went crazy with it. So we have bootstrapped it into a very nice model where we use a lot of the serverless technologies from AWS and a lot of other cool bits we have picked up on the way, and we kind of bundle them up into a very nice, really quickly reproducible workflow where the teams just pick it up and get on very quickly with it. And we can really, really quickly kickstart projects and launch projects because of that.
Yeah. And I imagine that you have to, especially in this industry, you'd have to collaborate with marketing quite a lot, because a lot of the numbers that you see in the data, you have to like relay them back to like other teams within the business. Is that right?
Absolutely. And marketing kind of drives most of what happens, what you see on the website. They kind of control a lot of the offers being put on, the actual campaigns we're launching, even the range you look at sometimes. You know, they have a huge, huge part to play. And they're also there looking at what the sentiment of people are, what they're feeling, what they're saying. You know, so there's a lot of drive off that. And we have a very good, amazing social team as well that does amazingly good at making sure they capture and harness that that sentiment. And then we have other kind of like units, business units inside the business that kind of help drive that. So whether that's getting some data from the insights team or the BI team trying to get some reports out, it kind of gets all pulled down into that funnel, and you can start looking into and start capturing things.
Mm. So I guess, do you guys get like the mass of the data, and then do you have to analyze it and find out what's useful for the rest of the business and then relay it onto them?
Yes and no. There's a lot of so we have a lot of services that offload their data in some form or another.
Okay.
And it's up to the BI team and the insights team to understand, to kind of like make sense of it in the grand scheme. So and then we have a lot of projects where the data is already being captured in a way where they are already reporting out of it. So it kind of helps easy for us to capture. So we don't have to kind of do a massive data dump in one place and try to understand what's going on. Some of the systems are clever enough to kind of do their own system level reporting and kind of like almost like analytics out of it.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many moving parts to this, isn't there, really? And God.
We had to learn it on the job. When you build microservices, there's a whole different level of pain that comes with it, and that's why you will see like companies like Uber, for example, are pulling back on that a little bit, and they're trying to go back into a lot less microservices kind of architecture. And I believe Netflix, I think, are trying to do something similar as well. Like it's when they realize building microservices, a lot of them, is actually bad. So, and we had the same problem. We kind of not at the same level as Uber, for example, but we had a similar issue, and we're trying to mitigate it and trying to work out it differently, but the same problem kind of lies. So yes, it is a lot of moving pieces, and you know, a simple service release in one of the backend services, completely harmless to you and the person who's making that change, might break something downstream, and you know, and you don't know, that can have a negative impact on the customer journey and customer experience. So that is a big part of the whole drive we have at PLT.
Yeah, and it's quite scary, because I imagine that if the website is down for even 5 minutes, that results in a massive loss of money.
Oh, I know.
Yeah,
I know, and it is, and we are working very, very hard. The last two and a half years have been kind of like in the long. It's been a very long road to kind of try to get us to that independence of where the sites won't go down, or if the site goes down, only one site goes down. And we kind of have been coming working together as a team and as with our partners, trying to work it in a way where this is no longer a problem. So we're very, very close to it now. We're very close. We've done a lot of websites which are completely independent now, and we're just working our way through the stack to make sure everything else kind of just works in that independent way. But if something actually does, because outages are completely normal, they happen. You cannot have a completely 100% non-outage setup. There are ways to do it, but we're very far away from that. But it is possible. It's just to reduce the risk of it, and that's what we're working towards. But the next year, there is some very exciting stuff on the roadmap that will completely make it non-outage proof in a way.
Sounds exciting. Is there any? So, would you say that's like the biggest challenge that you have in this industry? I mean, what's the biggest challenge?
The biggest challenge actually has been just the how fast things move. You have to constantly reinvent yourself. The technology world changes at a very, very fast pace. So a lot of time, you know, you're figuring out what that next phase should look like. And I say this to everybody that, you know, the hardest part in IT is not to learn, is to unlearn what you have learned, because you constantly start believing this is the way to do it and stop realizing there's a better way of doing something because of things are moving so fast. And that's one of the biggest challenges you have, because you have to constantly ask yourself the question that, yes, I know this is the way to do this, but is there a better way that I'm missing out on? And that's where, you know, you got a whole support structure around you. It's not one person. It's the whole kind of team that makes the decision together to make sure we don't miss any stone unturned.
Do you think that's what people tend to underestimate in the industry? It's just how fast it is. Because everyone knows it's fast, but I didn't think it was that fast.
Yeah, I know. And there's a joke I can tell. Like, you know, when people start looking for React devs, and they were like, we need people with 5 years experience with React, and React would only been out for 2 years, you know? And it became such a big thing in a couple of years. People didn't realize that it had been only out for a couple of years, and they're looking for 5 years experience with it. So, and that's the challenge of it. You know, when something comes around, which is exciting and really, really hits home with the dev, solves a lot of problems at its core, it gets embraced so quickly that you can be easily left behind. And then on the other side, the developers want to work with exciting stuff. So they would really, really like to, you know, when we release and launch a new exciting project, it kind of gives that team whole morale boost. Okay, hang on, we've got something new and exciting to learn. So it's a big part of that. And a lot of people miss out on that opportunity because they just don't realize how much there is to learn and do if you start looking around and seeing what's available. And then obviously the kind of like a lot of people kind of get caught off guard is with all this fast pace, you need to have processes around it in some form. Whether that's loosely coupled, the tightly coupled, that's a completely different debate, but you do need some sort of governing structure around it to help you manage this fast-paced chaos, and it's all managed chaos. It is chaos, but it's all managed. You know, it has to be managed. Otherwise, it would just be chaos, and that's not good.
Wise words, very wise words. So I'm just thinking about your history now, and when you first started. Is there anything that you kind of wish someone had told you back in the day when you began your career journey that you've had to really learn the hard way?
Oh, that's a good question. I think the obvious one that comes to mind is sometimes you get too much stuck on the details. And then, you know, 5 years on, 10 years on, 15 years on, you think back and go like, why did I waste my time with that so much? So it's a constant reminder of that, you know, you things will always work out. You know, if you give it time, they will always work out. So you've got to just let it go sometimes. And I believe in this idea that, you know, you can only provide people with information, not change their mind. That's up to them to do that. So it's very important to kind of make sure you know where that end of the line is, kind of thing. You know, you can only help somebody so much, or you can push something so much until it's not, you know, out of your hands. And then obviously, you know, it's it eventually it'll all work out. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, great words of advice. So in terms of the industry and the industry trends, I mean, I know this is a quite a sensitive question here, but is there any trends in the industry that you think are just wrong?
I think it's a very difficult thing to answer because, and I can give you a very friendly answer. Anything we know right now and believe in to be the way to do things could potentially be wrong. And that's right. The challenge we have with technology. Whatever way we're doing stuff right now, it would be wrong 10 years from now. Just because you're doing stuff and getting, I give this example to all the devs and say, like, no, you don't have to deal with Internet Explorer 5 and 6 and 7 problems like we used to have to deal with. Or that stuff is no longer there. And there was all those tools, all those workflows were developed in that time to solve those problems. But now if you do them, they'll be wrong. So it's the same thing kind of applies to anything we do. So you have to be, it's a constant reminder of looking at yourself and deciding whether this is the best way of doing this or not. And it takes a lot of effort to kind of look at that as well, because when you're in there, in the deep end, it's very difficult to put your head up and go like, is this actually working?
Yeah, definitely.
And that's the kind of like challenge we have. And I think a lot of people, I still remember the time when the cloud was around and, you know, when Rackspace kind of was the big name in the game kind of thing. And people don't want to go to Rackspace because they believe, why do you want to host websites somewhere else? It's your thing. You should control the hardware. You should control the ISP line coming to your offices and premises with it. And it was a very weird idea that, you can let somebody else take over the full kind of like a serious setup of it. And then, when AWS came around, the same thing kind of happened. So it's a slow learning process. People kind of, and now it's unheard of that you have a service that's not running on one of the cloud services. So it's the same thing applies, when this, in the next generation, the quantum computing comes out, it'll completely change the ball game again. And then you've got us, whatever we're doing right now would be wrong. So I think that's it. You have to just constantly keep that check where you decide whether this is the right way of doing things as you did at that time.
Is there any skills that you think are undervalued and you kind of like to see more people with these skills?
I think the one thing we talk about in the office, which we feel like is a very rare skill, is the debugging skill in technology. Really, it's to figure out what's causing the problem, and that could be a system or could be across 10 systems. So it takes a special skill set to be able to start seeing the problem across the system. And we have a lot of tools to help us do that as well. It's not literally somebody sat there going through code and logs. It's just there are tools that like do different forms of alerting for us, but it's a very, very different. And I've seen some very, very, in my experience, some very, very clever developers who can't debug because they just struggle to comprehend what their application code is doing in production. And then the other thing, other skill comes to mind is just leadership skills. And I don't mean by somebody who's like doing it my level kind of thing. It's to more to just be able to mentor people. When you see a junior developer or somebody who's new to it, and how do you kind of like help them to bring up? So I think that's the kind of like rare thing. When I see somebody like that, that's an instant like, yeah, this is good, because it's very rare you see that mentorship kind of coming through. And I think that's because of the social skills. You know, a lot of developers have all sorts of anxiety problems. I'm a developer, so I know kind of like, it's very difficult to kind of reach out to people. It kind of has a challenging part for a lot of the people in the community, but it kind of like helps. Even if a few of us do it, it kind of goes around.
Yeah. Is there anything, I mean, because you're head of technology now, so is there anything from your past kind of roles that you kind of miss? As in, like, were you more hands-on back in the day and you kind of just oversee things now? Or?
I'm still hands-on. So there's some problems that I still like to play with, look at, and I do have to, I do believe I have to be a certain amount of hands-on to know the problems people are facing. And I'm very technical savvy and have come from a very technical background, it gives me that extra insight that most managers will not get. So, and I do, people use me as, you know, a bouncing ball. They'll come to me, they'll bounce some ideas off me. We'll kind of like have a small chat about how to do technical implementation, and they'll go off and do it. And so it helps to be technically involved. And I try to stay myself as I can.
Brilliant. I just think to wrap us up today, Adil, so what advice would you give to someone who's looking to start their career in tech, who just doesn't really know anything about tech, but really wants to start their career?
I would say simple advice, be ambitious. You know, just have a plan and stick to it, and hard work. I mean, the programming is hard work. It takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of failed attempts to kind of get right. And it does annoy you. You would want to break something. You would want to throw a mouse into the screen. I mean, it's happened. I've seen it happen, you know, and it is frustrating, but the rewards are amazing. And think big. It doesn't matter. And you have countless examples of people trying to do. And I'm not talking about the Apple and the Google and the Facebook. You know, everybody knows those stories. But there are so many startups that have become big companies now.
Absolutely.
Just by doing things. I mean, I give an example to everybody. I mean, look at WhatsApp. The guy got rejected at Facebook, left Facebook interview, went out and made fudge WhatsApp, and then ended up selling it back to them. So it's
Jesus. I didn't know that. Story.
It's the craziness that comes with that. You be ambitious, because you need to have something big idea and you work through that. And that doesn't mean, you know, all of us have to make WhatsApp, but that drive gives you a lot of ability and knowledge and hunger, and you kind of live on that and work on that. And it's a constant learning battle as well. And I know some people hate it, some people love it, some people don't have time for it, and it's completely fine. I don't expect everybody to do that. But just remember that when you're going through the generation of people, you gotta keep remember some people are in that timeline of moving over. So anybody who's starting new, I think it's the perfect time, because you don't have to unlearn all the stuff we had to learn. Like, you have just jumped past all that knowledge. That is absolutely useless now. So it's an amazing opportunity for somebody coming in. And it's a great time in technology anyway, because of the amazing technologies that are coming out. Everybody's pushing forward some amazing tech stacks. And it's a perfect time to join this amazing industry.
Brilliant. Honestly, Adil, I could genuinely sit here and just fire questions at you all day. I really could. This is so interesting. But I think, just so you can get back on with your day and your very busy life, I think we could wrap that up there, if that's all right with you.
That sounds good. Thank you very much. Really nice talking to you as well.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform.